Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 23rd, 2013. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we sample beers from Nebraska Brewing Company and talk to the brewery's owner, Paul Cavillac, about barrel aging in new barrels and Chardonnay wine barrels. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook as well at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on Google Plus, too. You can find our little community on Google Plus by searching for Basic Brewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. You know how that works. Whenever you want to shop at Amazon, go to our website first, basicbrewing.com. Click on our link, and it will take you back to Amazon, or take you to Amazon, where you can shop as you normally do. And we will get a commission from that, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Home Brewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes and our Android app on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory. We're on the Stitcher app, and we're on the Windows Phone directory, too. Check out our Brewer's Logbook at BasicBrewingShop.com. In the front is a calendar that you can use to track your fermentation and plan your brews. And the good thing about the calendar, especially now, is that it is blank. So you can start brewing now and use the logbook, and you'll still have a full year of calendar pages no matter when you start. And there is a room in the back of the logbook to detail the batches of up to 50 batches of beer. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who has done so already. And protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. The bag is essentially a cylindrical cooler that is just the right size to accommodate a 64-ounce growler or a couple of 22-ounce bombers or three 12-ounce bottles. And it has an adjustable strap so you can sling it over your shoulder. And you can check those out at basicbrewingshop.com. We only have a limited number of those available. And you can see that bag in this week's Basic Brewing video episode, which is out there now. And in this week's episode, Steve and I sample a very hoppy pale ale brewed with the malted sunflower seeds that we got from homebrewer A.C. Albert that were made at the Colorado Malting Company. Very tasty. Very tasty beer. And we have an actual sponsor this week. From time to time, the American Homebrewers Association is going to be sponsoring episodes of the podcast, and we are very happy about that. You know that Basic Brewing Radio is a great way to stay in touch with all things homebrewing. Another great way to learn more about brewing better beer, joining the American Homebrewers Association. More than 37,000 members rely on the AHA for great benefits like events, web resources, Zymergy magazine, and money-saving AHA member deals. As a not-for-profit organization, the AHA relies on members to support their work to promote, protect, and grow the homebrewing hobby. Whether you're an expert homebrewer or just getting started, visit homebrewersassociation.org to join today. And I've been a member of the AHA for a long time, and they are definitely working to grow and enhance the hobby. And Zymergy magazine is worth the price of admission alone. And speaking of the AHA, the American Homebrewers Association is pleased to announce that the Illinois and Missouri legislatures have passed bills that will allow their state's homebrewers to transport their brews to share with friends and homebrew club members, to enter homebrew competitions, and for sampling at beer festivals. So good news in Illinois and Missouri. So once those governors sign those pieces of legislation, that will be two more legal hurdles that homebrewers in the United States will not have to worry about. So very good news. On the bad news front, our hearts go out to everybody in Moore, Oklahoma, after the horrific tornado ripped through that town again. I just happened to watch coverage of that storm live on the internet from one of the TV stations out there. and saw the aftermath, and seeing all those homes and all those schools in ruins was just heartbreaking. So our thoughts go out to everybody out there, and it's going to be a long recovery. A lot of people are starting from scratch. Let's get on to this week's interview. A few weeks ago, listener Matt Misfelt brought a care package of beers to Northwest Arkansas from Nebraska Brewing Company, and these were very special beers, and we are very grateful to Matt for the gift. And it's a gift that kept on giving, because they were the inspiration for the following conversation with Paul Kavalak, owner of Nebraska Brewing. Paul Kavalak, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Now, tell the listeners where you are and what you're doing right now.
Actually, I'm in Papillion. I think you guys said Papillon, which is the correct way to spell it or pronounce it, but we in Nebraska, we're just Papillion. I'm sitting at the Omaha Storm Chasers ball game at the moment. We had some business meetings out here today. I thought I'd be wrapped up, but we are tied with the Redbirds at the bottom of the ninth. So they knew I had an interview coming up, and they parked me in my distributor's box. So I'm in the Quality Brands box all by myself, and I'm chatting with you. So that's fantastic.
How all-American is that?
Heck yeah. And I got a beer.
Hey, there you go. So tell us about Nebraska Brewing, and tell us about your background as a brewer.
Well, I got my start in the right about the middle of the 90s. 96 is when I think I started home brewing. That's when my record books go back. And oddly enough, I got to tell you, honestly, I feel honored to be on your show. When I was homebrewing, Basic Brewing Radio was one of my staples. You know, there were a few that I'd listened to religiously. This was one of them. And I was trying to think on the drive into work today, you know, which episodes and what things I picked out from you guys that I used later in life. And you can never really put your hand on it, but I think honestly, you guys have a lot to do with my start into all grain. And, you know, I really appreciate the way there's some shows out there. They all differ, right? They have their own comedic personalities, dive extremely deep into brewing science. And you guys were really straightforward, down to earth. And for me and where I was at my brewing endeavors and cycle, it fit me perfectly. So it's really weird for me to now be on the show and chatting. But, you know, post 96, you know, brewing waxes and wanes over the years, but I think in about 2004, 2005, I brewed what became our Cardinal Pale Ale. I can recall the moment. I held it up to the light, and I smelled it, and I thought, you know what, it's better than what I can buy around here, so I think I could probably sell it. And that's what put me on a path to opening a brew pub. And you know, we went through the economic downturn, which created its own challenges, and that actually there's a whole book in it in itself with regard to the economy. But I think had the economic downturn not happened, we'd probably be a little quiet, sleepy brew pub. And because of the fact that it affected us like it did, we started distribution. And now we're actually in construction on a production brewery, and we're going to jump from, I think we're third or fourth place in Nebraska, to number one in production in the August timeframe this year. So it's a pretty good streak.
Wow. And how big of a brewery do you have?
Right now we made 1,550 barrels last year, 2012. So this year we'll put a production and canning line in place, production brewery canning line. That'll add 8,500 barrels. So we'll start in that 1,000 barrel range, and that thing is expandable to 50,000. So it's in a great place right now.
Wow. Now Matt Misfelt brought us beers, and we greatly appreciate his doing that.
That's fantastic.
And he said that you tossed in some extras in there. We greatly appreciate that. But we have four beers that we tried, and all four of these are barrel-aged. Is that something that you guys do throughout your whole line?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of what we've become known for. And you know, out of Nebraska, when we first started brewing, we'd go to beer fests, and people would ask us if we were authentic Nebraskans, and do you really make beer there? And then, you know, here we come out of the chute doing barrel-aged beers. So it was with some skepticism, I think, that they tried us at first. But I think you've got Apricot Aplav, our Romancing the Cone barrel-aged IPA, Melange a Trois, and I think you've also got our barrel-aged Hop God. And of those four, they all rate very highly, with the exception of Romancing the Cone, which is a brewpub-only beer. That's how you got your hands on that one, was due to Matt. So thank you, Matt. Melange a Trois in 2010 took a bronze at GABF and a gold the next year.
Wow.
And actually, we're going to chat about that one in a little bit with the Chardonnay angle. You guys had some very insightful comments your listeners will get to hear. And then Barrel-Aged Hop God in 2010 was Bronze Medal World Beer Cup. So, you know, the sleepy little brewery out of Nebraska did something well. Yeah.
Now you know that we're all about home brewing, so I can't let you go without getting some tips about working with barrels. I mean, from a home brewing aspect, what can you tell our home brewers who want to play with barrels and play with wood? What tips would you, as a home brewer, have found useful?
Well, you've got one, and when I listened to your tasting notes, this Romancing the Cone. We learned a little bit in competition at the Festival of Wooden Barrel Aged Beers up in Chicago, called FOBAB, I guess, and homebrewers may not know it yet, but it's kind of the epicenter for barrel-aged beer competition. So all that gets in there. We made a beer, and it was these new Missouri oak barrels that Romancing the Cone is actually made with. And as homebrewers, I think a lot of them get their hands on barrels that are small, which puts a lot of oak into contact with beer in terms of a ratio percentage. Oak to beer is very high. When we first made the first beer, it was a rye IPA that meddled up at FOBAB, and we let it go a little bit too long. You know, we let it go about the same duration as some of our Chardonnay beers, and when we pulled it out of the barrel, it was way, way over-oaked. And you guys commented on that in your tasting, that you were surprised it wasn't over-oaked. But we had some extra bombers laying around, so we bottled it, and we learned a great deal out of that experience. We didn't even have labels. We just figured, well, we're not going to waste the beer, but for the homebrewers out there, we kind of discovered that raw oak or new oak has a half-life, and I can't really quote you the ratio or the time duration that we've calculated with spreadsheets, but what's interesting, the oak, even though you think you've overdone it, you've ruined the beer, it's long gone, just hold on to it for a little bit, because oak, the raw oak character tends to plummet relative to that beer. So it's interesting. You know, it's given us some insight into shelf life, you know, when we want the beers to be consumed and so on and so on. But as homebrewers, you know, it's the same similar type of problem they're going to run into when they're using these smaller oak barrels that I see in the market right now. So I guess the word of caution is you can't overdo it, but don't despair, because if you give a little bit of time in the bottle or the egg or whatever you put them into, the fun thing is keep them, and you'll notice that the oak peels off pretty quickly, and you've got some good things going on in there, even if you think you've overdone it as a homebrewer. So I guess at that level, I know the local guys around here, the South Omaha Brewers that Matt is a part of, they're playing with oak a lot, and that's something we're trying to help them with as well.
So if you do spend too much time in the barrel and it does get too oaky, that oak will diminish over time.
It does, and it does quite rapidly. Well, in a relative sense, you know, within 6 months, you know, the half-life of the oak character, the tannins, has diminished, you know, greatly. I don't know if I'd say it's 50%, but it's really interesting. When we encountered it for the first time, you know, we discovered it for ourselves. The wine guys have probably known it forever, but, you know, as brewers, you kind of figure this out on your own. And it's really been very, very insightful for us.
How do you prepare your barrels?
Well, we used four that I can think of off the top of my head. We use the new Missouri oak is pretty interesting. We don't age for a long time in those anymore. But we use French oak Chardonnay. We use American craft whiskey. And we've also started using brandy barrels after using French cognac barrels. French cognac made fantastic beers, but they're very, very expensive, very difficult to come by. And like anything, I learned the hard way that cognac and brandy are essentially the same, like champagne and sparkling wine are. It depends on, you know, the terroir where you get it from. But the oaking regimens, I guess, if you'd call it that, new oak, very, very short periods of time, you know, sub 1 month, and you get a lot of oak character out of it. We try to find barrels that are essentially oak neutral, and we're looking more for the spirit in the barrel to shine through. So prep isn't really that much. You know, we get them in, we don't send them out to a lab for analysis, but we're looking for, you know, a sniff test. We do our best to make sure it's rat free up front. Do we know that for sure? No. But you can usually smell it when you take a whiff of the barrel. Higher alcohol content spirits tend to inhibit Brett formation, so we know we're safer in the whiskey and brandy barrels. But the Chardonnay, you know, presents some interesting facets, and I'll mention it one more time. We'll get to it later, but I really want to talk about the Chardonnay and some of the Brett character that you guys picked up on.
Well, let's go into the beers. What I did was I took the beers. In the past, what we've tried to do is, you know, bring the beers into the studio and have two or three other guys, you know, and kind of do a live tasting as we're talking to you. But to tell you the truth, that leads to some scheduling issues, you know, because not everybody can get together at the same time. And you know, two of these beers that we have from yours were 10%. And, you know, that leads into a safety issue as well. So
absolutely.
So what I did was for two of these beers, Steve Wilkes and I sat on the front porch and tasted them. And then the other two beers I took to the homebrew shop on Big Brew Day and had a group of guys help out there as well. So let's start out with, and help me with pronunciation, the apricot beer.
Yeah, I might be this is one of those breweries that produces beers that no one can pronounce. So we kind of combined, you know, American English pronunciation and French, but it's apricot à poivre and apricot with black pepper. And that one's interesting. Our lead brewer, Tyson Arp, is fantastic. He's a great chef on his own, and he tends to, you know, really go deep into subtle ingredients and what they impart on the beer. And one of the things that you brought out in your tasting, we do not like Nebraska Brewing Company in general. We're not those kind of guys that are over bourboning and over oaking and really, yeah, I hate to say bludgeoning a beer because there are beers out there that really are awesome, but we try not to bludgeon the consumer or the aficionado with these kind of one-dimensional characters within the beer. So the apricot à poivre, we're using apricot puree from, of all places, out of South Africa. It's aseptic. It's tough to get a hold of. That's where we get ours. It's a great Saison base, and we've got black pepper in it. And the weird thing that I always find kind of funny, even for myself, the black pepper will tend to creep in on the back of the palate. You know, you'll get really dry really fast, maybe a little bit of prickle, you know, on the tongue. And the amount of black pepper that's in 10 barrels, 310 gallons, is one tablespoon. But it's bizarre because you can still pick it out. And so from a subtle aspect, you know, there it is, one tablespoon in 310 gallons, and people still get it. But wow. That's a great beer. Yeah. And it also goes to the kind of lineage or the hierarchy of our barrel aging program. We actually use a French oak Chardonnay barrel three times. And Mélange à Trois gets the barrel first, and Mélange à Trois is the over-the-top, in-your-face, here's some Chardonnay, and please enjoy the beer character. And then, you know, as we kind of thought, you know, well, that barrel's still got some character in it. Where would it be most applicable next? We thought, well, let's try our draft Hop God. And then we, you know, found that, well, it works well with Hop God, but, geez, we just did the nose, so let's blend back in a little fresh Hop God and give its nose back. And then the subtle Saison at the end gets the Chardonnay for the last time. And after that, the barrels are sold off and we start the cycle over again.
Well, cool. Well, here's what Steve and I thought of the beer. Well, Steve Wilkes, welcome to the porch.
It's always a pleasure to be on your porch, James.
It's a nice, beautiful day. It's breezy. It's warm. And in a couple of days, you say that we might have snow.
That's what they're telling me.
It's crazy. We are sipping on some beers brought to us by Matt Misfelt. And you two had been corresponding, and he was going to come through the area, and he was very generously dropped some beers off for us, right?
Well, he sure did, and these are pretty cool from the Nebraska Brewing Company.
Yeah, we're sipping on the apricot au, and I'm going to say, I didn't take French, I took Spanish, not French, but I'm going to say apricot au poivre saison, which we figured out means apricot and pepper. Saison, and this is aged in Chardonnay barrels for 6 months. And boy, it is tasty. 6.8% alcohol. What do you think?
I think it's really good. I get the pepper and I get the apricot. It's a lovely little beer. I get a little bread in there too. There's a little barnyard in the nose in a good way.
Yeah, my wife, my silent partner, is sitting here beside us, but she didn't want to talk. But she said that, we were saying that the beer is tart, but it's not sour. And she confirmed that because she said it's not a vomit beer, as she says. And then she also said that, did you say horsey? A little bit horsey, which is maybe some Brettanomyces from the barrel.
Or somebody's old socks.
I don't think what's so, French for old socks?
I don't know.
So what do you get? Do you get the apricot? Do you get the pepper?
I get both. I mean, I definitely get both. It's got a nice kind of apricot jam-like quality, but it's not sweet, but I definitely pick up both the apricot and the pepper, and it's got that spicy saison thing going on. It's a little less tart and a little more mouthfeel, more body than a lot of saisons that I've had, so that's a good thing. I mean,
Yeah, it's not completely dry, and it's very enjoyable on today, where the sun is out, and we're just sitting out on the porch in the wind, unfortunately, but very nice. As it warms up, it's getting more complex. As you said, you get apricot, but it's not sweet. Think dried apricots. And you said apricots before we started recording. Now you're saying apricots.
I swing both ways. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Okay, as you heard there, we got a little bit of tartness, a little bit of barnyard. My wife actually picked that up. So you say that this is the third time that the barrel had been used?
Yeah, it has in our brewery, and your wife is got a good good analysis going on there. She, because we don't really analyze the barrel, we assume to some extent they're Brett free, but they're barrels, so they're probably not Brett free. And over the lifespan of from when we receive them to when we use them last, we're finally rinsing them and putting them out for sale, it's 18 to 20 months. So if there was some Brett in there, it probably gets more and more active toward the third stage of the beer. So when it gets down to that saison, they can get a little funky, I think it contributes to the character of the beer. And the one thing that I keep mentioning about Chardonnay, and I'm not sure this is kind of, I wouldn't call it groundbreaking, but we're using Chardonnay barrels for the sake of the wine, and that's somewhat unique. Prior to us, Russian River was doing a lot of Chardonnay. They were souring in it. It was really a well-suited barrel for souring in general. But I think what's happening, I think beer people in a general sense, and I would recommend this, go to your local wine store, buy a big buttery bottle of Chardonnay, whatever is relatively inexpensive. The taste doesn't matter that much. Pour a nice glass of it and stick your nose in there and pretend it's beer. And I'm betting to a large extent, people are going to come away from that glass and go, oh, there's Brett in there. And I think what's happening, and even I get it, it's difficult to discern to some extent Brett from Chardonnay. And it's really interesting because when we submit Mélange à Trois for competition, that's the one that gets the bulk of the Chardonnay character. Judging notes are, if we don't meddle, they're sometimes evenly split. And they come back, the beer's, it's full of Brett. And the next judge will say it's got a beautiful Chardonnay character. And yeah, exactly. So, you know, here we took a bronze, a gold, and then we didn't medal at all last year. But I'm sitting on a batch of Melange that I pulled off the shelves, and we're going to enter that one into GABF and World Beer Cup next year. I'm very confident this one's going to do exceedingly well. But it's interesting, you know, because to some extent we're breaking ground with Chardonnay barrels, and I think the judges really haven't experienced that character yet.
So how did you handle the apricots?
That comes in a like a foil pouch. Tyson, poor guy, has to deal with it. We brew the beer, we ferment. It's kind of like dry hopping, right? So the fermentation is nearing completion, and then we pop the top of the fermenter open the manway, spray the heck out of it with a disinfectant, and then we squeeze the puree into the beer itself, and we give it dose it in essentially the secondary fermentation so that it doesn't entirely ferment out of the beer itself.
Well, it's tasty. You know, the barnyard or the funk was not, you know, all of these beers to me were all about balance, as we say in the tastings. And so, you know, I think that they're multidimensional and they're layered, and they're a lot of fun to drink because you can kind of explore, you know, all those things that you're tasting, and you're not hit over the head with anything, any one of those components.
Exactly, and we love that ourselves. I'm still left with this weird mental perception that we don't make much of this beer, and we don't. But we used to make, you know, one or two oak barrels at a time, and I've got you know, a case or two of every batch that we produced in a cellar. I hate cracking them open because they're so scarce. but I think that's our hallmark. You know, if we were to be known for something at this stage in the game, I think it's, you know, the subtle character that builds complexity. I think there's a lot going on, and people they'll tend to get lost in what they're experiencing. I think that's pretty cool.
Well, let me play the clip where Steve and I taste Romancing the Cone.
We're getting mowing from a different direction now on the porch. And
that's what happens when you have a big yard.
So now we're drinking Romancing the Cone. A alcohol 7% by volume, aged in oak barrels. It says, perfectly suited for the Missouri oak barrel aging. Our West Coast-inspired IPA is rich in flavor, steeped in bitterness, and heavily aromatic due to the use of Citra hops. Is that accurate, sir?
Very accurate. This is definitely a West Coast IPA. So, yeah, and I get the citrus hops. Interestingly enough, as a sidebar, I just made a West Coast IPA using Mosaic and Citra and Chinook. But at the end of it, the predominant flavor that comes through is the Citra. I really, really went after that big grapefruit thing at the end. And this is pretty much, I'm kind of proud to say that the beer that I made and this beer that's Romancing the Cone are very close cousins and very nice.
Yeah, and what I think of this beer, I mean, there's probably more hop flavor and aroma than in the original IPAs, but the oak, I don't get a whole lot of, you know, it's not like chewing on a table leg, but there is kind of an oak presence in there that's noticeable. It's not dominant, but I think that maybe this is something closer to a historically accurate English IPA sort of thing, because, you know, those were shipped and aged in wooden barrels. So what do you think about that theory?
I think it's a good theory. And I agree with you on the oak levels, because I've had some oak aged thises and thats along the way that I just thought were not very good because they were just so oaky. But this has got kind of just the right amount of woodiness, you know, to it, that it's very pleasant. It's not overwhelming. So kudos to the brewer.
Yeah, I was afraid that the oak might clash with the hops, but not at all.
Currently recording.
Well, one of them is dead, unfortunately. it's a dark copper color. It took a while for the head to go away. It was
very foamy and stuck around for a long time. So very well done. I'm impressed by this one as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'd kind of like to visit this brewery. So not very far from Kansas City. It's a little, I think, a suburb of Omaha. So Papillon, Nebraska. See Papillon and die, I always say.
Is there a road trip in your future?
There could be.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve.
You're welcome, James.
So there you go. Now, this, you said that this was the over-oaked beer?
Well, it emerged from a process or kind of a analysis that we did with another beer. It was a rye IPA using, actually, it was the same barrels. These are barrels out of, I want to say Lebanon, but that's not right. If somebody Googles barrel manufacturer in Missouri, I'm sure they'll stumble onto it. But this particular barrel manufacturer supplies a lot of the wine industry on the West Coast. And, you know, they supplied us with a different type of toast. One contributes to cotton candy. The other is more caramel. So we got one of each. And when we experimented with the barrels, because they've never had anything else in them, no whiskey, no wine, no nothing, our beer was the first one in there. And they pick up that oak character very, very rapidly. And I have to admit and apologize to my buddy, Joey Redner, of Cigar City. We were at a beer fest years ago, and I experienced Hialeah for the first time. I believe it's a white oak or a cedar. I don't recall. Barrel-aged variant. And I said, oh, you know, how long was this aged, Joey? And I expected to hear, you know, 6, 7, 8 months. And he says 2 weeks. No. And I laughed. And I said, well, that's not barrel-aged. And I was proven wrong by my own little experiments there. And when that beer emerges, this one is 3 weeks. So it's only 3 weeks in the barrel.
Wow.
And there's a decent, yeah, there's a decent amount of oak character in there. And that particular batch that you guys have, well, I think it's probably 2 months old now. So a lot of the oak has already come off. And you know, you guys, I think, experienced a good amount of it. But its half-life is already, you know, in motion.
Yeah, it's not, as we said, you know, it's not to us, that bottle wasn't over-oaked. So very enjoyable. And, you know, I made the comment that I think that, you know, I would just wonder if this is a hint of what historic IPAs might be like or might have been like, you know, because of their contact with wood.
I thought that was a great comment. You know, when I heard that, I had to think back as well. And you know, for what it's worth, that's exactly how IPAs, you know, were created and shipped to India. And it got me to thinking a little bit how they were coating the inside of that barrel. And while, you know, I won't know, I bet they did pick up a heck of a lot of that oak. So that's a pretty good comment.
Well, let's move on to the tasting at the homebrew shop. And now they're a little more subdued than we were on the porch, but and a little more serious. They took the job seriously back there.
They went deep.
So let's play the clip with the Mélange Étoile.
Okay, here we are in the birthplace of Basic Brewing Radio, sitting across the very table where Basic Brewing Radio was born, here in the back room of the home brewery in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And we are here with
Robert Hanicek,
Chris Abel,
Andrew Sparks,
David Johnson.
And Bruce McCain has just lost, he's left the room. We've lost him. And we are tasting the Mélange Étoile, Belgian style ale from Nebraska Brewing Company. And impressions.
That's refreshing, citrusy, funky.
Good appetizer.
Tart, the oak aging comes through distinctly.
Yeah, I definitely pick up the wine. I guess it was a Chardonnay barrels, is that it? And I definitely sense a kind of a wine-like character in the finished beer.
Dry, tart, lots of white wine character. It's rather lovely.
Yeah, I think it's pretty delicate. At the very end, I get the toasted oak. And again, this is the third one of their beers that I've tasted, and none of them has been a kind of slap you in the face with the wood, so to speak. but very well balanced in that regard.
Well, you know, I get some tartness, you know, the kind of funkiness. Does it say it has anything wild in it? It has kind of a tartness. That probably comes through from the barrel. Yeah, really nice and refreshing.
Yeah, it's got a little, just a little teeny bit of the, maybe a Brettanomyces character, maybe just a teeny bit, but not such that I would market it as a funky beer.
It could easily have some Brett in here, but it's not a slap you in the face kind of Brett.
Yeah, again, very well balanced, I think. Robert is uncharacteristically
very good,
quiet.
Very good. I enjoy it. I enjoy the beer.
Is this up your alley, Robert? Is this the kind of beer you like?
Not really. I prefer hoppier beers, but I really appreciate this at the end of the evening before going home.
Well, you may like the next beer a little better. This is very good. I enjoy this quite a bit. And we will work on the rest of this beer and then move on to the next. So there you go. This one, of the four, I think this is my favorite. It was, you know, I don't know much about Chardonnay myself. I don't know much about wine, but I'm going to have to go out and get a big buttery Chardonnay just to see what I was, you know, to pick out that character that I was tasting. But there's a whole lot going on in that beer.
Yeah, there is. That particular beer, most of our barrel-aged beers start off in draft form, and then at some weird stage of a night of having a few too many, you know, we kind of hallucinate what barrels would be interesting, and so we'll experiment with them. And by the way, that's where the Inception series comes from. The Inception series are our barrel-aged experiments, and for the most part, they've gone pretty well. So we'll bottle them, you know, we'll release them. They sell out very quickly, and then we'll determine whether or not we want to make them again. But we had a draft beer, Belgian Golden Strong, beautiful beer, and it had a huge pineapple character to it. And, you know, Belgian yeast strain. And you know, while we're sitting here drinking it, I was a cork dork before a beer geek, right? So always some weird, hide me in a back room. But I thought, you know what, this would probably be really interesting in a Chardonnay barrel. So I didn't really know what I was hunting for, and I picked up the phone, called around, and I wound up paying way too much for a particular Chardonnay barrel, and I got lucky. I really did. Because I didn't know what spec to request or look for. I got a barrel off the West Coast that ultimately turned out to be very beautiful for this particular beer. And then, you know, after we'd bottled it and tasted it and released it and tried to sell it, we're like, okay, well, let's try to make this beer year-round or at least a couple times a year. So it drove us back into an analysis and a deeper understanding of the wine industry and how they're producing wines and how these barrels become available and you know, is this beer, you know, oak active or is it oak neutral? And it really, I think, honestly, because we got lucky with that first beer, we kind of discovered this whole new arena of barrel aging. And, you know, for what it's worth, I think we've taken a big step down the path of Chardonnay barrel aging, which a lot of other breweries are now pursuing. So it's pretty cool.
Talk about the base beer some more. Talk about the recipe.
That is a Belgian Golden Strong. And I think, honestly, it's both the key and the curse is in the yeast. And it's the Duvel yeast strain. And Tyson will shake his head every time he has to explain dealing with this. He has a lot of difficulty with that strain, and we're using a strain out of BSI, and now we're experimenting with a couple different other strains to try to ease our own burdens. It takes a nice, healthy, you know, oxygen feed, so a sugar injection. So we're doing extra things to it. When we first started trying to get this beer done and make it happen, it fermented, you know, well into the 30-day range, which is not great for a small, tiny brew pub who needs tanks freed and you know, making beers at a rapid pace. So in the intervening time period, Tyson's gone back to both the scientists at BSI and his own little propeller spinning on his head to figure out, you know, ways to shorten the fermentation on this thing. And I think, don't quote me, but I think he's got it down into the couple-week range. So he's had, you know, tremendous difficulty with it and also tremendous success. And it's also the same strain that we use in both our draft and barrel-aged hopcock.
Huh.
Well, it's not hot at all. It's 10% alcohol, but you wouldn't know it. I mean, it's very easy drinking, and it's good that we had five or six people drinking on that bottle because, I mean, it is a big beer, and we could tell, you know, the second tasting.
Yeah, you need more bottles.
Yeah. But anyway, I think it's a well fermented beer. You know, you couldn't tell that it was any kind of a, you know, a stressed or difficult fermentation from the final product.
Well, and then it gets to sit for an extra 6 months in the barrel and kind of, you know, reach some type of equilibrium. But it's a beautiful beer. It's my favorite by far. And I had the opportunity to have a couple bottles here the other day. People drop into the bar. It's interesting, you know, Papillion, where the hell's that, right? But people travel, and you know, we just had the Berkshire Hathaway weekend here in Omaha, and we had so many people come in that, you know, again, we feel very honored that we're not in Omaha proper, and it's a drive to get from downtown to Papillion, and people dropped in on us, and they're hunting for those beers, and they want to meet us, so that's really, really nice.
So the last one on the list, let's go to the tasting of Hop God.
Okay, now we've moved on to Hop God, which is a Belgian-style IPA. Aggressively hopped, according to the label, and aged in Chardonnay barrels as well. And Robert?
Well, as it was already pointed out, I'll pick up some similar citrus as the ale before. And I'm hoping to find the hoppy aspect.
It's not an American West Coast IPA kind of a hoppy.
Yeah, the hops and the Chardonnay sort of are competing with each other to come out front. So, but it's decent. I like it.
Andy?
Yeah, you know, the title Hop God. You know, I think most people are going to see that and expect more of a hop aroma to pop out, kind of like our West Coast double IPAs these days. And I mean, that probably is not what we should expect because it's been sitting in barrels for a while. And that freshness from the hop has probably diminished to some degree. But it's a tasty beer for sure.
I wouldn't title it Hop God either. That's somewhat deceptive. But the complexity is very in your face. It's like a battle royal of flavors competing for the top spot. And the Chardonnay character is there once again.
Is that positive?
It adds to the complexity. It's I like it because it's different. I'm always trying to find different things. The more complex, the better, in my opinion. And this beer is very complex.
Well, I'd like to try it, the un-oaked version side by side with it, to see, you know, what their Belgian style IPA tastes like without being aged in oak. Mm-hmm. Probably be, you know, quite a bit different.
I like it. I don't know whether, again, I guess we all agree with the title Hop God. We are anticipating some sort of a Pliny sort of thing with, you know, the hops or a Maharaja or something where the hops are all in your face and it's like, ah. But I think that you do get the hop flavors. You know, you do get the fruitiness of the hops, but I think that they're blended in with the Chardonnay character and there's a bit of the oak as well. So it's not, you know, it doesn't bring to mind what you generally consider to be a, you know, the hop god sort of thing that we're used to. So, again, I like it. It's just, you know, Dave, I think you're right. It is a complex beer, and the hops are in there. It's just that they're kind of mixed in. They don't dominate as much as a West Coast IPA sort of hopped beer would be.
I'll also say that I expect that they used a lot of low cohumulone hops because there's very little harshness to this bittering. You have to look for the bittering, and just by looking for it, you find it. It's there. But it doesn't, once again, it doesn't dominate. There's not really a flavor that does dominate, except for maybe the Chardonnay character.
Now, I have had
and I'm not going to name names, but I have had sort of Belgian-style IPAs where the bitterness was way too much for the yeast. And I think that the yeast, you know, brings some fruitiness on its own, and when you try to overhop it, when you try to overbitter it, I think that's a definite clash. And I think that this beer, it's not an adversarial relationship between the style and the hops. Does that make sense? Is anybody else in that camp? I mean, have you guys had some of like overly hopped the Belgian style IPAs that? Does anybody else know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about, James. I'm a Belgian IPA brewer. And yeah, I've done exactly what you're talking about many times. So if you want the Belgian character to come through, you can't be over the top with the hops.
I've had one of your Belgian style IPAs, I think, over at Andy's house.
My Pacific Jade IPA, Belgian IPA, yeah. And I'm sure I hit the yeast over the head with my hop additions.
No. Yours was one of the ones that I liked. Because we had this, we probably had this conversation before. I think that this is, we might not call it Hop God. I don't know what name you would give it to characterize what we're tasting. But I think it's a tasty beer.
Tasty beer. I would come for more.
So you want some? There is some more in the bottle.
Yes.
So you're up for that, Robert?
Yes, and I would have another one of those. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, it's an interesting. It's different and it's light.
There you go.
Maybe Hop Goddess, not Hop God.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Hop Goddess. Well, thanks, guys, for playing.
Thank you, James.
So I think what you have there is a matter of the label establishing and some expectations.
Yeah.
And then those expectations changing as the beer is sampled.
Yeah, so Hop God, the name, and we get this occasionally or routinely if I'm going to kill myself here, but Hop God in Nebraska, right? So we were told when we opened our brewery, never make an IPA in Nebraska. You'll never sell one. And then, you know, not only do we make an IPA, we're hop heads, right? So here comes this beer. I was inspired after a visit to Green Flash, West Coast, and I have Lafrique. And I'm like, wow, this is a really cool beer. I'd like to do something in this space. You know, people take inspiration. They don't try to copy, I guess. It'd be a great way to say it. And I came back and I talked to Tyson. I said, you know, this Belgian IPA thing, back in the day, it was newer, it was emerging. And I said, see, we can do this, kind of toy around and get us in the space. So Tyson went to work. I think at some point in his lifespan, he'd had the beer. Didn't try to evaluate it new, just, you know, what he read about the style. And he set himself to work. So he came up with this recipe, and the first time he presented it, we looked at it on paper and said, oh, that's pretty cool. Let's try it. Well, it was 101 IBUs. So in Nebraska, 101 IBUs is Hop God, right? And this, you crank back the clock a few years, that was a highly hopped beer. You know, by West Coast IPA standards today, or double or triple IPAs, no, it's not really, you know, top of the heap. But so one day driving to work, we needed a name. You know, you hallucinate a little bit in the pickup truck, you come up with Hop God, and there it is. Yeah, so 101 IBUs, honestly, should have been a little bit off the charts hoppy, but the beer is big, it's substantial, and it tends to find balance. And the draft version is, you know, they're born of the same base, but the draft version is pretty straightforward. It's a big beer, not necessarily all that bitter, but it's one of those stand-up beers that when you taste it, you're going to go, wow, this is really cool. So we took the beer and said, you know what, this might be great for our second use Chardonnay. Let's see what we can do with it. So we placed Hop God in a Chardonnay barrel, fresh off of Melange à Trois, let it sit for 6 months. And as it's maturing, you know, we tasted along the way. One of the things we noticed was that the really cool nose from Hop God was diminishing. And we used Cascade, Centennial Warrior, and Chinook in Hop God. I think one of you guys is trying to speculate what hops were used. There they are. And then you get this big Belgian yeast strain, and all those things were blown away. It was gone. And it happened because of the age. So I also think one of your tasters speculated that, you know, the age is going to take that stuff off. It absolutely did. So we get to the end of the aging spectrum, and we're trying to figure out what to do with it. And we said, you know, let's try to blend back a little fresh hop god to see if we can revive the nose. And ultimately, that was the key to this particular beer. We gave it back about 5% fresh hop god, got its nose back, and we were very pleased with it. Stuck it in a bottle, and it did quite well. And by the way, with the exception of Romancing the Cone, the barrel-aged beers that you tasted there, I think are all rated. I think all of them are 98 points on rate beers, so they're doing pretty well.
Wow. Chris Abel suggested Hop Goddess might be a better name for the.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I had to chuckle because as soon as you try to name a beer, the next thing that you encounter in the brewing world is trademark law.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and gosh dang, you know, it's everybody thinks they want to be a brewer. Well, I would say study law first and then try to figure out your recipes.
Well, it was a tasty beer. I think once even Robert, who's the hophead, you know, once he got over not, you know, getting kind of a Pliny the Elder / Avery Maharaja, you know, hop burst, and settled into the beer, he liked it. It's just, like I say, just the expectations of thinking it's going to be one thing and then discovering it's another thing kind of took us a little while to shift gears on that. But very well done. I thought all of these beers were very well done. And Steve drives up to Kansas City to see friends and family every now and then. So I might have him, look around at the liquor stores up there to see if he can pick up some more bottles the next time he's up there.
Kansas City, they have quite a bit of our beer down there. So they're very, it's a great market for us. They appreciate the beer, and we're very, very thankful to have them.
Awesome. Well, listen, I appreciate your taking. How's the game going, by the way?
Well, they are. They just cleaned the scoreboard, so they're now in the top of the 11th, and it's tied up 4-4. And I've not been paying attention per se, but I've kind of keyed on the big plays. I don't know if you guys heard, you know, any of the crowd noise in the background there, but it's an intense game.
Well, it's all because you're doing this. So.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, we'll let you get back to it. And I congratulations on all your successes, and we look forward to hearing more from you.
Well, thank you so much. And I'll tell you what, you know, as a blogger, all these guys out there that are covering the brewing industry, you know, I guarantee you, I know there are days when, you know, you kind of close the books on a day and you go, God, have we really made a difference? You guys absolutely have. And I want you to hear that, and I want your fan base to hear that. You know, people like yourself truly inspire, you know, the brewers of tomorrow. So thank you so much.
Well, you're very kind. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.
Well, thanks again to Paul for the very kind words. And thanks again to Matt for bringing the beers. And thanks to everybody who helped in the tasting. And I enjoyed all of those beers. And Steve still has some of those. And I think that they would pair very well with some of Steve's cooking. Hint, hint. And for those who are curious, in the top of the 12th inning, the Memphis Redbirds scored 7 unanswered runs to top the Omaha Storm Chasers 11-4 in the game that Paul was watching. He should have stayed on the phone. You know, they were hanging in there when he was on the phone with us. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Our new growler bags are available in our shop. Protect your precious homebrew and craft beer as you take it from place to place as the weather warms up this season in the Northern Hemisphere. Check out our new support link, where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. You can check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering, Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits, all on our site, along with combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. Our logbooks are on the store as well. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are The Complete Idiot's Guide to Positive Dog Training, 3rd edition. Is that a guide for complete idiots or is that a complete guide for idiots? Either way, best of luck with the positive dog training. I'm sure the purchaser is not actually an idiot. And Yakima Quick Back 3 Bike Trunk Mount Rack. That's Yakima Quick Back 3 Bike Trunk Mount Back. No, Trunk Mount Rack. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine as well through our associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.